It is really a pleasure to be here. I said this morning at breakfast that this group, in terms of importance and collegial relationships and partnerships, is the key group that I feel connected to and that we at United Methodist Communications to relate to. And I also reminded the folks who were at breakfast this morning that it was 2 years ago that we introduced the Nothing But Nets campaign at UMAC. If you remember, I think we were in Indianapolis at the time. And Bishop Bickerton was given time in front of you. And you all took that, ran with it, went back home and started doing activities and promoting it. And as of last week, the report was that Nothing But Nets has raised $21 million for bed nets. I consider that your success because you are the glue that not only holds it together, but you were the initiators who carried the message first, and I am truly grateful to you for that. Today, I'd like to do three things, and I have some colleagues with me who will also help us to work through those three things. Carrie Graham is the president of the Bohan Group. The Bohan Group is the agency of record for our new public media effort. And with Carrie is Jamie Dunham, who is the chief planning officer for Bohan. And we've met and worked so closely together these last few weeks that we sort of feel like we are staff colleagues and are interchangeable in doing these kinds of presentations because we want to get the conversation started in the church about how we rethink church. So the three things I want us to consider are, first, the context in which we are working. And I'll do a bit of that explaining or background. Is that my cell phone here that you all are hearing? I could hear it myself, so I will see if that was it. The second, so the context is first. The second is a new concept for our public media engagement. And the third thing is to begin to look at the campaign itself in a very formative way. But I want to start with the context by looking at some headlines. Here's the first headline. Weeks before Russian tanks rolled into Georgia, a cyber attack was mounted that shut down Georgian government websites. Here's the next headline. No longer for teens, social networking is a tool for high-paid managers to find job opportunities. Headline number three. Text messaging is so widespread, state legislatures are debating laws to prohibit texting while driving. Headline four. CNN and NBC are reorganizing news bureaus to take advantage of new technologies. One-person bureaus are opening around the world. And the last headline, immigration and the movement of peoples are surfacing cultural conflicts in every part of the world. In a generation, those who are defined today as minorities in the United States will be in the majority. Now let's look at those stories and deconstruct them very briefly for just a few minutes. Internet security experts say the Georgia cyber attack is the first time such an attack has been used strategically before an armed conflict was actually begun. It won't be the last, they say. It emphasized how dependent the world is on the Internet and how an attack of magnitude can affect banking, power transmission, transportation, and governance. Imagine that in this day. And Georgia is at the bottom of the list in terms of Internet use in the world. Social networking is changing how we relate to each other in significant ways. and it's growing at a breathtaking pace. Facebook began in 2004 and today has 80 million active users. It's the fastest, and here's an interesting thing, the fastest growing segment on Facebook today is people over the age of 25. Someone wrote me the other day, a parent who said, "My daughter says that I can't get on Facebook. It isn't for him," you know, and she was offended by that. LinkedIn, which is for professionals earning more than $100,000 a year, has 25 million members. It's adding 1.2 million new users per year. That is one every 2 seconds. Beyond the obvious public attention that he garnered, Barack Obama announced his vice presidential choice by text messaging for three additional reasons. The first was that he could collect millions of names for a database, which he is now using in a grassroots network to mobilize folks to get out the vote. The second is to mobilize supporters. And the third is because it is the most inefficient, most efficient and inexpensive way directly to add names to a database or to communicate with people through any medium available today. 80%, I'm moving quickly because I want to get to some other folks, but I think it's important for us to kind of get a big picture of how we are operating in this environment. And a few of my colleagues who are on our commission have heard this before. Apologize for the repetitions, but it's helpful for us as we set the stage for rethinking church. 80% of the world's population lives within range of a cell phone network. In the year 2000, 17 billion text messages were sent globally. In 2001, the number ballooned to 250 billion. In 2004, it had doubled to 500 billion. The Philippines today sends an average of 400 million text messages a day. That's 142 billion a year. Texting plays such a significant role in the Philippines that opposition to the government of Jose Estrada was mobilized by text messages, and that government fell under the weight of grassroots mobilization. It's for this reason that the government of Myanmar shut down text messaging services, if you recall, a few months back during widespread protests by Buddhist monks in that country. Let's move to another whole medium. Cable television now attracts 50% of the audience as broadcast television share of audience continues to decline. The fact that Obama and McCain attracted 16, 17 million viewers, and that was considered a substantial audience today, has to be seen in the context of 30 and 40 million viewers in the 1950s for some of the television programs that were on during those days. An audience that has shrunk by half over the last 15 to 20 years. Daily newspaper circulation declined 8.4% in the year 2000. But hear this. Online readership of newspapers increased by 9% in the last quarter of the same year. The Pew Internet Project reports that 93% of teen girls and 99% of teen boys play games on the internet, and that this cuts across racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic lines. That it's everybody, and it's at all economic levels. Pew says gaming is a social experience for 74% of those teens. They play in person with friends or they connect online. Games often serve as a topic around which interaction occurs and is organized. A third of teens, Pew says, visit websites and online discussion groups for the games they play. What this means is that the digital media, through gaming, offers teens social capital that they use to enhance their personal relationships. Nicholas Carr, writing in The Atlantic, reports on research by some university professors at University College in London, and he identifies a change in our attention span as we read with a different style on the Internet. It is clear, the report says, that users are not reading online in the traditional sense. Indeed, there are signs that new forms of reading are emerging as users power browse horizontally through titles, content pages, and abstracts, going for quick wins. It almost seems that they go online to avoid reading in the traditional sense. Carr makes the point that what is happening is that new media are reprogramming us. Is your head spinning yet? Mine is. If that's true, you're not alone. Writing for the Project for Excellence in Journalism, Kathy Taylor wrote this. Ad executives, and she might say this of all of us, one gets the sense about ad executives that few know how to cope even with the changes to the media landscape that have already happened, let alone the ones that are still to come. Simply put, the concept of mass media has ended. It is less clear what will replace it and how advertising will play a role. So we've talked about the media, but let's not forget that interesting demographic information that we also noted as a headline when we started. By 2042, persons identified as ethnic and language minorities today in the United States will outnumber non-Hispanic whites. By 2022, so-called non-minority children will constitute a majority of the nation's children under age 18, and by 2039, minorities will constitute the majority of working persons in the U.S. Demographic changes are affecting how people live and where they live. This year, according to the World Watch Institute, for the first time in human history, half the population of the planet lives in urban areas. We are an urban population. 32% of us, or 1 billion people, live in slums, many of which lack the most basic services, such as water, sanitary sewers, and police protection. In 30 years, the World Bank estimates the urban slum-dwelling population will have doubled to 2 billion people. So let's assess this environment for just a moment, deconstruct it, and ask ourselves, what does that say to us as communicators in the United Methodist Church today? The Barna Group recently released survey results revealing that 16 to 29-year-olds are more critical of Christianity than any previous generation. In this group, only 16% have what Barna calls a good impression of Christians. 87% say Christianity is too judgmental, and 85% say it's hypocritical. The study also found that those who describe themselves as non-Christians is growing in every age group. Interviewed by Time, Barna researcher David Kinneman said 23% of Americans over age 61 are non-Christian, self-identified. 27% of people among ages 42 to 60% are non-Christian, and 40% of 16 to 29-year-olds. He concludes that younger Christians are therefore likely to live in an environment where 2 out of every 5 of their peers is not a Christian. We face a multiplicity of media and competition for mind space. We are living through lifestyle changes and values in postmodern, post-Christian culture, changes that are continuous and that require adaptation and the ability to turn on a dime. Writing in the State of the News Media, and this is, I think, key to our work as communicators today. The State of the News Media 2007 by the Pew Research Organization, one journalist says, "There is no single or finished news product anymore. News use is continual. We seek information 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on demand. We actually work 48 hours a day, and or as we'll say in a moment, 43 hours a day. We look for information when we want it and how we want it, and primarily through search engines. We are, at the same time that we're doing that, multitasking, which means we're watching TV or emailing or browsing the web or texting or talking on the telephone." I had an interesting event the other day. I was telling Carrie about this. I was on the telephone and someone was giving me what for, as occasionally happens in the world in which we live. And the conversation on the phone just shut down because this person was really destroying the conversation. And I look over to my email on the screen and there's this note that says, "Are you online?" "Yes." "Don't listen to him." So we have two layers of conversation going on. One is a conversation that is being heard by everyone on the phone, and the other is at this second level of text conversation. Now, if you're teaching a class in college today, and you have students who have a laptop and students who have a BlackBerry, you know what I'm talking about, because the commercial on TV about the kid who's looking at the NFL highlight clips on his laptop while his teacher is lecturing about Shakespeare or something, that's really not so far from reality. We are doing more than one thing at one time. We are even having multiple conversations in the same conversation because we are empowered by the media to do that. The Pew research goes on to say that news is shifting from being a product such as today's newspaper, website, or newscast to becoming a service. And hear this: how can you help me, even empower me? A news organization and a news website are no longer final destinations. Now they must move toward also being stops along the way, gateways to other places, and a means to drill deeper, all ideas that connect to service rather than to product. The walled garden is over, the editor of one of the most popular news sites in the country told the Pew reporters. Wow. You hear that? Our websites, which have been our territory, are no longer the destination. They are the gateways someplace else. And these battles that folks have over websites and territories are skirmishes that are outside the user's experience or concern. Institutions such as the church are not designed to be adaptive and reactive to these kinds of conditions. We are designed for stability, to provide a vision of the eternal and unchanging love of God, to offer comfort and solace, and to anchor us in faithfulness to God. The challenge that old line denominations, such as we are, face is how to continue to proclaim a gospel that is relevant to the needs of the current age in words, images, and sounds that communicate and invite those not familiar with faith, but who are seeking faith. When we started the campaign, Open Hearts, Open Minds, Open Doors, the United Methodist Church was indistinguishable from most other mainline denominations. Only 14% of those polled knew our denomination, and some of those called us a generic denomination, like the generic green beans on the shelf at the grocery store. Now, after 8 years of media engagement, awareness of the church is at 30%. And among those surveyed recently by the Gallup organization, United Methodists, Methodists in general, but United Methodism has been high in visibility, have the highest positive and the lowest negative perceptions of 10 different religious groups. 96% of those surveyed have a positive or neutral view of United Methodists, while only 4% had a negative perception. That's the platform on which we are now building and moving toward the next step. So people are aware of us, they perceive us extremely well, and the data shows that first-time attendance in worship is higher than it was before the public media campaign began. But we're moving now to begin a more focused and targeted approach to key audiences. We've been trying to broadcast and reach a wide range of folks from 18 to 54 years of age. We can see from the research that we're talking about that we have a critical need to begin to target and to focus in on younger adults, many of whom are not going to have the opportunity or are not going to be available to us to present the church to them in a way that we have had in the past. And so we are, with the Rethink Church process, beginning to rethink who is our target audience, not abandoning the existing audience that is much broader, but beginning to focus messages and to use these new media in more targeted ways to get at a key demographic, the 18 to 34-year-old seeker. And we will continue to address persons who are 35 years old and older. We will begin to use new measurements. One of the weaknesses of measuring church activity or church strength, and I've contended this for months, if not years, with some of our statistical keepers in the church, is that membership alone is not a useful way to gauge the strength of the denomination. That engagement may be a better way to do that, because we may have many people who are very faithful in attendance at church or engagement in church who choose, for reasons that we are not clear about, to not become members of the church. Now, does that mean that we need to theologically forget about the value of baptism and incorporating them into the church? No, it does not mean that. That's bad theology. But we need to move away from the storyline that the church is in decline because church membership or church attendance is not what it was in the 50s. And in fact, my personal bias is that in the 50s it may not have been as strong as the numbers indicate anyway. And so we're looking at how do we begin to reach out to an audience, engage with them, and then measure that engagement as a way of not only determining the strength of the advertising. That is not me this time. I know that that's not me. I felt like before when the phone rang, I was actually passing a kidney stone, you know. I don't feel it this time. So we're looking at new ways to measure, and those measurements are through engagement. I'm going to stop here. Jamie, are you picking up from here? Jamie will continue us through. Then Carrie will work us through the campaign, and I will summarize.
Well, in our world, we talk a lot about relevance. And I think that if we'd been counting, we heard Larry say relevant several times in the comments that he's made. We start thinking about relevance from the standpoint of being able to communicate with somebody, because in the old world that we lived in, messages many times were sort of static. We thought of brands, if you will, as static things that never changed. And in today's world, you know, the messages that we have are only as important as they are deemed important by the consumer, by those persons who are listening to it. So if we look at the issue here, the issue is church relevance. Now, all of you are communicators, so I don't have to really tell you about the soundbite. But as Larry just expressed, we have a huge number of people that are outside of the church and really did not grow up in the church. Some 70% of those who are under 40 don't have the same faith expressions and background that we do. So what do they hear about the church? And I'm not just talking about the Methodist church. I'm talking about any denomination. Well, obviously what they're hearing are negative squabbles, scandals, politics, and maybe some negative experiences from people that they know. Secondly, when you look at denominations in general, these people who are unchurched don't see a difference in them. And there's several reasons for that. One is they maybe grow up in families where the denomination loyalty has not been an issue. Because what we find these days is even in those people who are churched, they look for the character of the congregation and not the flavor. So there we have another issue in that if they're all alike and you're only looking for that local group, then what else is important? Well, what we find is, and I bet every one of you have had this experience in your congregation, there might be someone who comes and they attend for 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, and they've never become a member. Because there is a sociological trend that's going on that people just do not join organizations in the way they used to. So if you belong to a Kiwanis, a Rotary Club, some professional organization, you know that because you see it. And so if membership isn't important, then that's the reason measuring by membership may not be the way, because they're looking for what is it that's active and involved in my life. So if you go to the last thing is, this is a really important figure. 85% of the people in the United States say that they know a Christian, but only 15% of them say that they see a difference in those lifestyles that make them want to be that. So we take all these facts into consideration, and we say, well, who is this seeker? Well, there's been a lot of research done by the communications group, and they have defined the seeker as a person who is either looking for something larger in their life or looking for a new faith expression. And so that fits a lot of people in a lot of different need states and where they may be going. So what touches this unchurched person? Well, if you saw some of the other slides, there's a book I hope that some of you get to read. It's a really short little book, and it's called Jim and Casper Go to Church. And it's the story of a church planter and an unchurched person who visit churches across the United States. And they visit churches from big churches like Saddleback to small cell churches in Seattle. And this kind of matches up with all the other research that you see that's going on. So what touches an unchurched person? Well, when they go in, they want to see that there are people at that church that are very authentic, that they're not going through some ritual, but they really believe and act upon it. Secondly, they want to know that they're welcomed when they come in. And I sort of say this is, they want to know that they're really welcomed and not that, hi, my name's Jamie and how can I help you today kind of welcome. The third thing is they want to see that the words that they hear expressed by the members there are backed up by works. So what is the genuineness about what's going on within that church? And then the last thing is, how do I fit into it? Is there something there for me? One of the things that we did was we sent a bunch of people out to have like a day in the life of church. And one of the girls who had grown up in a Catholic tradition and was not currently attending a church said, well, the one that I went to had a jiu-jitsu lessons and a community garden, and that might be what caused me to be part of that church and go back and check it out a second time. So people are coming to the church in very different ways. So in all this body of research, the research was divided up into three different groups, and one group was classified the active seeker. So what we see in this active seeker audience is that they're looking for full immersion experiences. Well, if you think about some of the comments that Larry was making about what's going on in the world today, you know, everything that we do is a 24/7 kind of experience. So that full immersion means that we're constantly on, and we want to be part of something that's that way. They're also looking for a way to make a difference in people's lives, and that's why the authenticity of works that are matched by words is so important. And the last is they want to be in a place where they can love, serve, and help. So what are some of the attributes that are important to these people? Well, this idea of being in a place that offers you things that are applicable to your daily life is really important. One of the other things is they want to be part of a worldwide movement that's making a difference. And, you know, the community that we're living in today is vastly changed from the one that I grew up in because we're much more global. I know all of you probably have had experiences and know people that are working out in the world at large. And to be part of that, we have to be kind of a welcoming group that offers opportunities for that. So let's look at that 18 to 34-year-old group. What are they looking for? Well, it's no surprise that they want to be part of a social network. They've kind of grown up on that, and that's why they're so accustomed to communicating that way. But there again, you see that intersection of their daily life and faith. They're looking for that. They're also experimenting with different kinds of faith expressions. And lastly, I think the thing that's most important is that they really want to make a difference in the world. So you see all of this research sort of building on some themes here that are important. So as Larry said, open hearts, open minds, open doors for the past 8 years has been tremendously successful. And it has provided a platform, we think, for where United Methodist Church is going in terms of being able to communicate to this new audience. We were struck by a quote by Reverend Weems, who talked about opening doors, windows and doors to new possibilities about the church. And we think that this is a really important time in the life of the church in general and the United Methodist. I had occasion to meet with some of the folks from UMCOM and David Kinneman from the Barna Group. And he said, when we were discussing it, he said he thinks that there is no other denomination in the United States that is as poised to really make a difference in reaching this new target and redefining what church is in this postmodern age than the Methodist Church. He said it's because of the infrastructure that you provide and because of the openness to new ideas. So what we seek to do in crafting communications is we always look for what that strategic premise is. And as we went through the process of doing this, we were sort of struck by the idea that Methodists have always been pioneers. And I think that's part of your Wesleyan tradition of going to where the needs are and addressing them and being the first to speak out. And what we were equally struck by is you're continuing to do that today. I mean, just the success of Nothing But Nets is just one small example of all the major things that you're doing as a group. So this idea of being pioneers allows you to open doors, and you will hear that word door several times today, but this idea of opening doors to someone's personal spiritual journey seems to really address as what is at the heart of what each one of you do on a daily basis. In the world of advertising, we always talk about positioning. How do you position yourself against the competition? Well, in your case, the competition's not other denominations. It's a lot of other do-good events that are out there that people are part of. So it could be Bono raising money for Africa, which is a noble cause. It could be a Katrina relief. It could be any number of things like Teach America or the resurgence of the Peace Corps that people people are part of. But in our case, what we see that the United Methodist Church brings is that you are already this active community of interconnected believers. And what's really so positive about that is that it's not that you have to change anything, but what we do have to do is communicate in a different way so that we can really, again, sort of bring that cultural relevance to this younger audience. So what are we going to do about it? Well, in brand strategy speak, how are we going to do this? The first is we want to change this perception, tell this good news, and change the perception into this one of this active community of believers. Number two, we really want to redefine the church experience beyond Sundays and a building. Because the things that you're doing are not contained in a building. They're everywhere. And the thing, and to be part of that 24/7 life of these younger people, you have to be there and offer them opportunities at all places in their life. And number three, which we're really sort of struck by, is that we have the opportunity to really move back to what the first century church was all about. It was the original social network. And to be able to do that, we have digital assets that we have never had before. And it allows us to do it in a way that's so much more personal and striking than the ways that we've attempted in the past. So we think that this is at a really opportune moment. So what are we going to say to people to make them think differently? Well, our strategy is we're going to ask them to rethink church. And as part of that, we're going to redefine what that church is. Because open hearts, open minds, and open doors now need to be open so people can walk through them into what these new experiences are. So to test this, we went back to the Barna group. We used the same definition of seekers that has been used in all the previous research. We prepared a concept statement to be tested. It says, suppose there was a church that is rethinking church beyond Sundays and buildings, that offers solutions for daily life and offers opportunities for active participation in the world around you. Would that be appealing to you? Well, 88% of the people said it would be. And the importance of that is to understand that only 7% sounded like something else that they had heard someplace else. And so our friends at Barna said, this is great. These are amazing results for this. So we have to take this and we have to be able to go out and touch people in new and different ways.
Well, you've heard Larry talk about this explosion of media touch points that particularly this 18 to 34-year-old audience is using on a daily basis. It's a little bit like media hyperactivity. And yet if you think back about for hundreds of years of what the church's expectation has been, and perhaps the church's, if you'll think of a product, what we have been selling is that Sunday in a pew in a building. And that is where our disconnect has been happening over a period of time. We'll crank this up. Otherwise, I'll get a crick in my neck. Okay, there we go. So, that's much better. I'm going too far. Hang on. Jamie, help me go backwards. And as we look at what's happening with media and we try to align it to what's really happening in church, and the idea that there isn't just one door to church that happens to be that Sunday door, that big red door that fronts whatever, you know, the main street is there. There are hundreds of doors in all of the Methodist churches around the country, around the world. I mean, there are doors to alternative spring break. There are doors to sports programs. There are doors to youth groups. There are doors to study groups. There are doors to missions. There are doors to world volunteerism. There are doors to daycare. And that's where we say, if this media hyperactivity is going on and this particular audience that we're talking to, 18 to 34, and the seeker is starting to say, this church thing is a disconnect for me, we have to start saying what we want to do is invite them in through a variety of doors, whichever door is comfortable to them. So that while we're not saying, when we talk about rethinking church, we're not talking about let's rethink theology. What we're saying is let's rethink that open door. And that perhaps for some people, walking into down that main aisle of the sanctuary on a Sunday may not be something that they're ready to do. And we have talked extensively about, you know, even just inviting someone in and solving a secular need such as daycare and letting a mom have an experience and ultimately a relationship with another mom who might be a Methodist. And that might turn into a conversation among two people who get to know each other that might turn towards spirituality. That's okay. I'll tell you, in my own company, it's much easier for me to say, you know, to one of my cohorts, wouldn't you rather let's go play basketball at the church on Thursday afternoon than to stop him in the hall and say, can we have a conversation about your personal relationship with Jesus Christ? I mean, it's tough. So we're not only offering, I think, the seeker an opportunity to start that relationship in a different way, but we're offering our own church members an opportunity to offer that relationship in a different way. So this idea of doors is huge. And the idea that there are thousands of doors is really where we're headed. And that's really about entry into church, not necessarily the theology at all. So as you may have seen through my preview of all my slides, isn't that really the fulfillment of open hearts, open minds, and open doors? To date, perhaps, I look at that line, and having had something to do with it the first time around, I like that line a lot. But I think in some ways that has been a descriptor for the church, and the United Methodist Church has open hearts, has open minds, has open doors, and not so much about a mission. And we're saying, let's turn it into a mission. Let's turn that word open from an adjective to a verb. And let's go out there and let's start to open hearts. Let's start to open minds. Let's go out and open doors actively. And that's part of what Jamie's talking about with this active positioning. This is obviously not something that is new to the church. The four areas of focus that were brought up at General Conference are all about action. And so that's something that's already in the mindset, at least of church leadership, if not filtering all the way down through the entire church body. So we know that's going on. That's a good thing. As we move into this, in the next quadrennium, we're going to do some things differently to make sure that we're capitalizing on this sense of action. In the past, you may recall there have been, you know, perhaps three themes a year expressed differently. We're saying we're going to have more continuity. You're going to notice it's more continuity of message, and it's more continuity of media. The first thing we're going to do is have one central theme across a year. So the messages and the envelopes that those messages reside in will look similar, though they will change. We defined internally ourselves 2009 as a year of action, as the year of action. That is not necessarily an external message, but that's what we've defined it as. And then throughout the year, we're going to have five different sub-themes or different content that runs throughout that year, with global health, certainly with an emphasis on malaria and nothing but nets, particularly as we talk about launching this on Malaria Day in April of next year. As well as volunteering, which is an invitation to people to be active in their own communities, to talk about action within the community and specific initiatives that aren't necessarily as far-flung as Africa or Asia or Georgia or some other places. And then we're going to continue this effort of breaking news so that if there is positive news or there's negative news, we want to have the church either celebrate or do what we did with 9/11, or with some of the tsunami natural disaster events that have happened in the last 8 years. The church needs to be there to have that voice that Larry talked about earlier today. As we do this, it is incredibly important for us to take advantage of whatever new media are available out there. So we can't just plan this for the next quadrennium. We have to do this annually, if that's not too long a period. So we literally are only going to plan these a year at a time to make sure we're being topical and that we're taking advantage of any new technologies, any new media, et cetera, any new messaging. And as part of our process at the agency, we reassess quarterly anyway. So I want to go back to this pioneers of an open spiritual journey, because I don't think we can emphasize that enough. And for us, as we talked about, how do we execute and go back to not only the first century roots, but how John Wesley interpreted that sense of first century roots and how he was a pioneer, and then how that has really become a theme throughout the entire United Methodist history. We had to look at ourselves and say, as we execute this thought of rethinking church, we have to continue this idea of being pioneers. Our work has to be pioneering. And also, as we've talked within the church itself, we've said you need to make sure that this is your own touchstone as we think about going forward and communicating with seekers outside the church and with people inside the church. We have to be pioneers. So, I'm going to show you a little video here. And this is not a commercial. It's about a 3-minute long video that we put together internally for gatherings just like this. So that now that you've heard all the facts and figures and you've heard a lot of the strategy, what does this look and feel like in terms of words and pictures and music, and how does this start to come out as messaging, although this is clearly messaging for an inside group such as you all? All right, I'm going to play that for you. So, it's pretty clear with the audience we're talking to, and with that kind of a message, we're not only going to have to rethink church, we're going to have to rethink media. Okay? And there it is. What this audience really wants is, again, more control, more choices, more personalization. More, they want it when they want it, and they want it their way. Larry talked earlier about the 48-hour day. Actually, what has happened is that people have the way people are using media now compared to the way they were able to accomplish things 20 years ago have literally turned the 24-hour day into a 43-hour day. I don't know who did that math, but it's pretty interesting. Basically, what it says is, and this is just a slide on how people use television. And while they're watching television, this is the percentage of viewers who are doing other things. So what you see is that 61% of all TV viewers are looking at their email. 53% are on the web somewhere. 48% are on the phone. So as you can see, they're not exactly engaged in television and or they're multitasking. Another thing that's happened is if you, and we talked about the drop in network television viewing, as people have gone out and found their little niches in cable networks and the things that they're really interested in, they're also finding that there are many, many other pathways than just that television network to go and get the information that they're interested in. In fact, a Biography Channel viewer has 23 different channels of other possibilities to go and find more information on something that they may have seen on the Biography Channel. So that's a variety of other, you know, whether it's things by text or it's by other sites that are Biography Channel sponsored, etc. So people are going and looking for information and they're finding it in a variety of different ways. So as Larry said, obviously, the last 8 years have been successful. We've seen our awareness go up on positive ratings. And a lot of that was done with television. Today, that is just not possible. Television alone is no longer the appropriate sole voice for us. When we started working with this audience, we spent a lot of time looking at their media choices. And what we found was television is about 23% of their media diet. The other thing is that television, as Larry said earlier, we want to create a conversation. And what's interesting about television, while it is pretty ubiquitous, and it is a great way to get a message out to a large number of people, it is a monologue and not a dialogue. It is not that conversation that you're allowed, perhaps, by getting online or some of these other media opportunities. So this is our whole thought about moving from the convention of the media plans of the last 8 years and reinventing how we talk and look at media going forward. Obviously, we have to be flexible. We have to extend our message in a variety of other places and be continuous. We've actually gone from the 8 weeks of television that you may be used to over the last 8 years to a 52-week plan. I'm going to show you little pieces of that in a minute. We're aiming younger. Again, we still want to attach ourselves to events in life that have some potential for spiritual rethink, whether that's a new baby, a marriage, some other event in life that makes you perhaps more spiritually accepting. We are always, instead of looking at the typical TRP, GRP approach to television itself, we're not doing that. What we're doing instead is attaching ourselves to programming where the viewership is much more engaged, where they're putting down that cell phone, they're putting down that email. It's like my daughter, that would be Project Runway, American Idol, but in terms of this audience, it's that kind of appointment viewing that we're looking for. And we want to hold the attention of the viewer so that they listen to our message. So instead of one major dominant plan, what we have is six. And I'm not going to get into that too much, but obviously digital is the new emphasis, and I'm going to show you a little bit on that right now. I'm not going to go through all of these initiatives, but I want you to see the things that we're going to be involved with over the next 4 years and some of the partners that we're dealing with. As you can see, there's a centralized telecom with an 800 number. There will be text programs. The biggest initiative of all, though, is our attachment to Google, and we have actually formalized a proprietary partnership with Google to help us with search and to help us with some of the aspects of our website, and there will be a separate website moving forward. And then there's also email and widgets. I'll talk about that in a second. And some participation in social networks. Interestingly enough, the more we talk to some of these social networks, like Craigslist, they have offered, their foundation has offered to go in and help us train individual conferences on how to use Craigslist to merchandise some of these other events outside of Sunday services. So some of these other programs. And they are, we're actively discussing that with them. And they will provide that training for free. So as I said, there is a website, and as we, one of the big challenges is if people are this hyperkinetic in their media use, and we're using all of these different channels, how do we bring them into a funnel and then talk to them about all the different doors that are possible with the United Methodist Church? Well, we decided that we needed the separate website that is primarily for seekers. It does not conflict with UMC.org, and obviously that is, you know, for people who are already inside the church and have a relationship. But even in terms of language, and not speaking to seekers in what would be stereotypical church language, that's one of the reasons we need to have this seeker site. But the primary thing is to be able to let them come in through this portal and then see what we have called 10,000 doors. I don't know if there actually are 10,000 doors or there aren't, but it seemed like a good round number. So we've called it 10,000doors.org, and at the end of every communication in any medium, it will always say Rethink Church at 10,000doors.org. Should you land at 10,000doors.org, you will see doors, which kind of makes sense. And as you begin to touch your mouse or touch that your little scroll pad, some of those doors disappear as you can see it left. And it's just automatic. And you start to see that there's some words back there and a little bit of a challenge and a message to enter, which is the journey begins here. And as you get farther beyond that, what you see is we've divided a number of interest segments into menu-driven blocks. Each of these menu blocks is widgetable. I'm not sure that's a word. But you can grab that block and drag it to your desktop and go back and view that content as it gets updated over time. It's not unlike your Southwest Ding or the Weather Channel or those kind of things. There's also a place here where we will feature whatever the current videography related to in probably in coming months, that'll be nothing but nets. But whatever initiative and action that's going on in the church, that will be featured. There's also a place for other assets that are relevant to this target and even for videos to come from the church. Obviously, that requires some filtration, but there's a place for, again, for that dialogue to take place, even as we get contributions from member churches. The thing I really want to focus on here, though, is this part of this partnership with Google is if you go to the Go and Do section, which is primarily about what the church is doing in the world and how you might participate, whether that's by flying to a mission or handling a mission in your own backyard or donating your service, or you're donating your money to one of those causes. Part of this application is using Google Earth to help people see what's going on in the United Methodist world and where and our missions are taking place. So if you were to go and search Africa in the Go and Do search bar there, you would see all the missions that are taking place on that continent that are United Methodist Church related. And as you keep getting farther down to specific provinces or territories or even the village, you can get literally all the way down to ground level. And you might even have contact information for some of the missionaries there. There is perhaps even, we've talked about, a travel itinerary for you to go and become part of the mission where that's possible and where that's appropriate. In all cases, there are text boxes that give you more information, and we will provide links to other initiatives as that is possible and appropriate. And there's other information for you to go and get about any of these particular things that a viewer might be interested in. Television. Now, this is not a finalized TV spot, but this is a concept that we're in the process of getting ready to produce. There's a longer form television spot, which really kind of talks about this multiple doors approach. And then there's a smaller 15-second TV spot, which focuses on a specific initiative. And that's how the sort of balance of television will be handled, ultimately. Even in the longer form television spot, though, we've made it possible so that we can tag that with a specific initiative if it were malaria or nothing but nets or something, you know, another global health or poverty issue. And here's what that looks like, long form first.
Church wasn't just a building, but thousands of doors, each of them opening up to a journey that could actually change the world. Would you come? Rethink Church at 10,000doors.org. Together we can open hearts, open minds, and open doors. The people the United Methodist Church. $10 buys a malaria net that can save the lives of a family of four. Find out now at 10,000doors.org.
Okay. And all of these messages we'll end up with that driver, Rethink Church at 10,000doors.org, and the people of the United Methodist Church. As we move into other media, such as print, I want to just point out that the creative is always tailored to the content of the publication. So you're not seeing the same ads in every publication when you're flipping through magazines on the airplane to somewhere. So that if, and again, print primarily is, again, talking to those life stages, those moments where you're more receptive to a spiritual message. So in Parents Magazine, obviously your content would have to do with babies and parenting. If other content may have some more social aspects to it, the content changes again. And if we were in magazines that are more world-related, we might have, you know, there's more active language and imagery that relates to that content as well. These are just some of the suggested publications, so I don't want you to start writing down the names of publications yet. Obviously, we're focused on a variety of planning publications right now, so don't get stuck on that. But even here in National Geographic, in this particular layout, what you see is what if church was a verb, and that little block of color over to the right-hand side, which interrupts that copy, is a business reply card that, not unlike the television, is related to a specific initiative, so that you could either tear it out, send it in, send in your email, send in your even your donation, whatever you want to do, but always still driving you to the 10,000doors.org site. But it always gives us flexibility to talk about something new. And in any medium that we're purchasing, we want to make sure that we're part of their digital assets as well. And again, we're tailoring content within even those channels as well. Now, outside of what we've been showing you, some technical, you know, sort of more advanced, perhaps talking about some of the new media and some of the slicker publications and channels, we made sure that we talked about some that are not so techie and could be leveraged more simply around the world. So everything from, even if we had to do materials that could be distributed in various countries and be ready for rollout, this was not unlike what I used to use when I would sell my meal points in college, or I wanted to get a job as a lawn man somewhere. But messaging that's very simple and analog. as well as pre-printed materials that are on the shelf in various places around the world and in some of our church partnerships that they can just take out, and they may have a text message to it so that you can get in touch with help if should there be natural disasters or issues around the world. And as you can see at your chair, there are even human campaign elements, such as a T-shirt, where we have our Rethink T-shirt. But also we have a variety of other apparel at the new UMC apparel store, which doesn't exist, actually. But we even had some shirts that say, I believe, that would start that kind of human conversation. That just on the front said, I believe. So if somebody stopped you on the street and said, no, what's that about? What do you believe? That you start a human conversation. And the more of those human conversations we can start, honestly, that's what we're trying to do across the board. Partnerships such as the one that was founded with Nothing But Nets, hugely important. In case you haven't noticed, that really struck a cultural relevance chord around the U.S. And I think that had a lot to do with the success of that campaign to date. So we're looking for more opportunities to create partnerships, whether that's with Home Depot and Habitat, which they already have a relationship, and us tapping into that, or a variety of other partnerships. And then we even looked into what can we do in some other countries where the primary medium is cell phone and telecom. So in Uganda, we looked at there are some kiosks that are solar powered for places that don't have electricity. We can sponsor some of those. Those become their own little town hall in many ways, because people come and villagers come and want to load up on their reload their cell phone card. And so we also had a cell phone card campaign here where we print messaging on the card or pre-recorded. And then, of course, since we've talked a lot about doors, door hangers have become important, and I think there may still be some on your in front of you or in your kit. And we even looked at, I guess it was back in June or July, we took a door not unlike this one out into the streets of Nashville and just set it up. And it was not related to the church, but it was just in a public space. And we watched people, how they encountered it, and we filmed them. And there were people who, first of all, I think wanted to call Homeland Security. And they stood and kind of walked around it. And then others walked through it. And then others avoided it altogether. But many of them took the little door hangers that we put on those doors. And we have talked about, as part of the launch coming up in April, and the association with Nothing But Nets, is having an event not unlike this that certainly has its epicenter in some media markets, perhaps New York City, and we have some plans for that, where these doors may show up in Central Park. I don't know that Christo will be involved in doing those, but it may be Larry Christo Holland. As well as one of the things we'd love to have is as many churches as could participate in that sort of unusual sense of door, being out there in the community and watching people encounter that. That certainly gives us the idea of having some massive press, a national basis, not just in New York City. So that's something we'll be talking about more. And then we even have, bumper stickers, a variety of other mediums. This one was a bus shelter where if you go up to it, it has no words on it, but you peep through the peephole in that bus shelter, and it's like a little viewmaster. And it can have whatever the initiative is that we want to talk about, and it sends you to 10,000doors.org. Bus wraps, modular direct mail that you can either print or hand write, whether you're sending it to 10 people or you're sending it to 10,000. This is for a variety of churches. And even forwarding email strategies that keeps this thing going electronically through email. We've even begun adapting some of the language and look to materials in other areas of the church. These are some materials that will be coming up for special Sundays. And then hugely important, as we talk about rethinking church, obviously it's going to be important for the church to be involved in that conversation. And the church has to rethink, how do we open those doors? How do we merchandise those doors? How do we say we've got something other than three services this Sunday, and one's Hispanic and one's the regular, you know, 10 o'clock, and one is the contemporary service in the afternoon? I mean, we have to talk more about how do we not just deliver the same experience and let people in at their own pace and their own comfort level. Larry?
Okay. So we are almost at the end. Does this begin to get some energy, though? It certainly did for us and for our commission as we heard this idea and as we have begun to flesh it out. The touch points are really multiple. And I think it's what is most important for us as Christian communicators to be able to explain to the people of the church is the touch points are not just about media. The touch points are really about how we connect people and how we empower people through media. And that's the key issue for us. Conversations online, in communities, conversations that result from engagement between peoples who otherwise may not connect in quite such an easy way. And that happens through volunteers and mission activities and in other events. It happens in Pittsburgh when you go downtown, Mark, and do the festival at the holiday season. It's involvement in the community, and it's about creating human relationships. And each of these touch points is really high touch. That is what we in the church, when we are at our best, can do our best. The other is new opportunities to use the Find a Church function on umc.org. And I want to spend just a moment to talk about that because you are key to that. The Find a Church will be expanded and will provide us with the means to profile local congregations so that it is no longer about an address and a telephone number and a website. But it will be about a profile of a local congregation so that if I'm in a town and I want to explore a local church with particular interests that I have, I can go to Find a Church, look at that church's profile and other profiles, and determine which might be the best match for me. That will result in new ways for us to tell the stories of the church and to help people understand that the doorway to their church may be a Google portal and not only their own website. So I hope you will go back and interpret to your Episcopal leaders, your district superintendents, your local church pastors, that the fact that they have a local church website is wonderful, and we certainly want to encourage that. But that with the Find a Church and with the Google search engine, there will be other pathways. And don't neglect Find a Church. Don't assume because you've done it once and gotten the information on that that's all there is to it. It's really about a dynamic, ongoing relationship. New doorways, feeding programs, study groups, movie groups, groups of young mothers that Carrie was talking about. It's about intentional seeker interaction to create new forms of communication opportunities. And in each case, with these touch points, it is about creating a new conversation with someone and providing them with the information that may be useful to them to grow in their faith and to develop a new relationship to the church. It's also about finding new tools as ways to minister and to update ourselves in our ministry. And finally, we will update our training events to incorporate this Rethink Church strategy. so that we can begin to do the training that is necessary for folks to understand the digital media that we are using, and encourage them to use that digital media. And as Carrie has said, if churches want to take Craig's list up on training, that they will have the opportunity to do that. So with that, we wanted to present this to you in full. You've gotten pretty much the full load here today, because you are such an important audience for not just an audience, more important than that, partners in making this work. What will we need from you? Among the things that we will need from you is your support to help us add to the Find a Church profiles, so that we get those stories and we keep those up to date, so that they are relevant and valuable and can be enhanced and expanded and updated on an ongoing basis. We need you to identify stories that you can feed to us at UMCOM, or that you can document yourself, so that we can have the stories that amount to the 10,000 doors that are the entry points for people. Some of you, while you were here, gave us stories. Those are the kinds of really valuable resources that we are looking for. We need you to be an ambassador in your conference and your district and your congregation. And it's important for you to be ambassadors, because you understand the value of communication as more than a tool or a piece of equipment. You understand and can say to folks that communication is about a conversation with people. It's about interacting with people. It's about empowering people. And my job as a conference communicator is not merely to produce, well, maybe merely is not even the right word, but it's not to produce those printed publications that we have, not to produce the website. It's that, but it's more than that. It's the process of engagement with people that we need to be ambassadors about. We need to plan special emphases at annual conferences in the coming year. We need to engage churches to update Find a Church. We need to collect the stories about Open Doors. And we need to figure out how we plan and assist this process. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had 10,000 doors across the United States and in Africa and in Europe and in the Philippines, and we got this kind of global attention for the church that is opening hearts, opening minds, and opening doors? We can't do that without you and your partnership, and without your thinking about how that could happen. But it's the kind of grand scheme that we think we ought to be giving attention to, that will capture people's imagination and capture their attention. So with that, I believe we have given you the whole load.